Welcome to Manager Tools. Brief before you change. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. Should I tell my directs before I make changes? Do I need to brief my team on changes? Can I roll out the Trinity without briefing my team on what I'm doing? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Finally, after years of waiting, The Effective Manager in book form is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your other retail booksellers, as well as signed copies are available on our website, manager-tools.com. If you want to know the basics of how to manage others effectively in book format, including Kindle and ebook format as well, we encourage you to buy, read, and then implement the guidance in The Effective Manager.
Mark, you've said this more times than I can count on my hands. Never introduce a managerial change without first introducing that change. If you're going to make a change to how you manage your team, it works far better to tell them what you're going to do in advance of doing it, right? I mean, that seems kind of obvious.
I've gotten so many questions about this recently. I can't remember where I was. I mean, I got some very serious questions from people at a client site, or maybe it was a public conference. I don't remember. It had to be client side. And several people came up and said, you know, I don't really want to do the briefing. And, you know, it never occurred to me that maybe they don't like briefing. They're not comfortable in front of their team. But I generally don't see that as a problem. I don't think most individual managers think, you know, I can't get up in front of my team. And for the record, when we say briefing, we don't mean it has to be a formal half hour. You stand up. You have slides that you project, that you've practiced, rehearsed repeatedly, and so on. We're simply saying, inform your team as a group with some structure about what you're doing and why you're doing it and how you're doing it before you embark on changes, particularly to how you manage them. So I didn't really see these questions that these people asked me as indicative of, I don't want to get up in front of my team, because I can see a manager doing this briefing sitting around a table.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do it. You could do it in an open environment. Just have people roll their chairs over and form a circle kind of thing. I think that would work fine. I really was surprised by how many people said, yeah, I just don't want to do a briefing. One person told me they were worried that if they briefed, then that would really cause them to have to continue. I'm like, okay, maybe they're afraid it won't work. I don't know. But they were saying, you know, if I don't brief, I just try this softly, then it's like a soft launch. And if I don't like it or they don't
stop
like
doing
it,
right. I haven't committed completely.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. And I don't think of people and ideas as the same things as products that we do soft launches on. I think if you're wondering whether or not to start to do something, wait, think about it a little bit further and decide whether or not you want to commit. And then if you're going to commit, commit. How many people have complained about their company saying, well, we really want to do this, and they kind of do it halfway? And I think for a lot of managers, as busy we all are, if you don't commit to one-on-ones or feedback or whatever else, whatever other change you're doing, the likelihood of you sticking with it is pretty small, in which case I would say, don't do it.
Yeah. I don't think that's the reason why people don't want to do it. In my head, it's pretty clear, right? Which is, they don't want to have to make the argument as to why this is going to be a good thing. They're afraid of pushback and justifying this change in process, right? Nobody likes change. And if they don't feel comfortable with making that argument, then they don't want to brief it. Conflict, my friend.
Yeah.
Some people, I know not you. I know not you, but some people are uncomfortable with conflict.
Yeah, I get that. That makes sense to me. And the other reason for this cast is it's been 11 years as of right around now, and we have never clearly said a separate cast about briefing changes that you introduce. We do have another cast, Introducing Managerial Change, which is really more about big picture systemic changes where you have to make an appeal. You have to motivate a much larger audience based on some great science about change in large organizations. But when it comes to an individual manager, we've actually never said in its own podcast, here's why to brief and how to brief.
Yeah.
So I was surprised. And think of it this way. I mean, here's the case I always make with people. Suppose your boss one day started changing the way he interacted with you. Maybe he wanted more weekly meetings, or he started expecting more frequent reports from you, or maybe she instituted regular mini performance reviews. Would you like it? Just didn't, he didn't say anything.
Knowing nothing else?
Right,
absolutely nothing else. That sounds like all bad to me, right?
Exactly. The astounding thing about that is, and we'll talk more about this, is the idea that you don't want it from your boss, but you're willing to do it to your directs, right? If you weren't briefed, would you know why he was doing it? Heck, you'd probably guess, right?
Well, and my guess would be because I'm screwing up and he wants to nail me later on.
Yeah.
That's what
my next question. Would you assume it's a good sign? I don't think so. Would it help if you didn't know whether he's asking for these changes from everyone else or just from you? That's the point you were making. Of course you wouldn't like it. And of course you'd want to know whether your boss was engaging in these behaviors only with you or with the whole team. And if you were put off or uncomfortable or frankly nervous, you'd be much less likely to be effective, both with the new efforts he or she were making, but probably also in your daily productivity, wondering what the hidden meaning is. And look, the way to avoid that sense of defensiveness on your part and questions and so on, is for your boss to have told you what he was doing and why in advance. That's why we say, as busy as we all are, our guidance is always brief change first. When you're implementing change, brief it first. You control it. It's your choice. And you would want that from your boss. And so, as a general rule, therefore, you want to give it to your directs.
So what's our outline today?
It's simple. I mean, we don't have an outline. I think we've done this once or twice before. It's simply making the case for briefing change first and talking briefly about what to put in the briefing. We've separated out in a different cast, different guidance, the details of what goes into briefings because those apply in virtually all cases. We'll do another cast, perhaps considering it a part two to this, but it is different to talk about the criticality of briefing change first versus what actually goes into the briefing. So, guys, remember Horstman's law of managerial reciprocity. Whatever you want from your boss, your directs want from you. The reason that's a law is because too many managers say, well, yeah, I would have liked to have gotten that from my boss, but my directs don't need it from me. Or, yeah, I could see where that's a problem between me and my boss, but that's not a problem for me and my directs. It's almost like a little comedy routine that people do. Well, I'm not my boss. To my directs, me and my directs, we're different. We finish those sentences. We're a team, whereas I don't feel like I'm a part of my boss's team.
But what's your relationship with your boss? Not that great. We're not, he doesn't really know me all that well. And how's your relationship with your directs? Oh, we're tight. We're just one happy team.
And then we ask that guy's directs, and his directs say, well, not that good. Really, not that good with our boss. But our directs, we're tight. It happens everywhere. You know, if you want clarity from your boss, that's a sign that most directs, including yours, want clarity from you. If you want advance notice, and who doesn't? Your directs probably want that from you. If you want frequent communication, if you want honesty, if you want kindness, if you want career help or guidance, if you want political transparency, your directs probably want that from you. The stuff that bugs you about your boss are things that are likely to bug your directs about you. It's that simple. And look, guys, we're not saying it's that you're as bad as your boss. You're not. If you listen to Manager Tools and she doesn't, that's a good sign. But your role power over your directs distorts the relationship with them. It does.
A lot of people don't get that. A lot of people don't understand the factor of your role power and what that means relative to the relationship, regardless of how you are as an individual.
Yeah. A lot of people don't get it. And a lot of people understand it at various times and forget it. I forget it. I mean, and that's all I do is think about management. And I forget it with my directs. In fact, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. Oh, a friend of mine. We were talking about his business. And he was explaining that there was an area that he was worried about. And he wasn't getting the response he wanted from this particular area, the people in the area. And I said, did they know you feel this way? No, I know what I said was, have you told them your concerns? He says, oh, they know. I said, I didn't ask you whether they knew. I asked whether or not you've told them. He says, well, no, but they really ought to know. I said, dude, they don't know. If they're not doing what you want, what seems reasonable, and you see something, but you haven't told them what you see, it goes back to Horstmann's law of organizational communications. Tell your people something 7 times, and half of them will tell you they heard it once. And you just have no sense in too many cases of how being the boss affects things. And your perspective on things is different than your direct's. So the things that are easy for you to see may not be easy for your directs to see, and your greater experience causes you to see A, B, and C and immediately know that the cause is Delta or Charlie or whiskey, let's say. That's a bad cause, whiskey.
It may be, but that's a different problem.
As long as it's good whiskey. So maybe the cause is Zulu, and you know. And Mike and I have been managers a long time, so we're sitting in a meeting, and somebody says, well, there's A and B and C. And we could look at each other and go, well, that problem's caused by Z. We know that. That happens 95% of the time. Well, somebody, one of your directs with a lot less experience than you, doesn't know that. Hasn't had the experience, doesn't know that over and over and over again, when you get A, B, and C issues, problems, evidence, concerns, it's generally driven by Z. I'll never forget reading an article in the Wall Street Journal about 20 years ago about how record companies, this is before the long, slow demise of record companies, were trying to invigorate their management and relationship with talent, the bands and singers and so on that they promoted and produced and so on. So what they were doing was sending these people who managed the talent, I think they call them AR people, but off the top of my head, I'm forgetting what AR is. Anyway, and they were, this guy who was a producer for the record company was down in a meeting when they were talking about, okay, how are we going to put this album together with the band? And the band said, we really want to lead with this song. We like this song the best. And the record company guy says, no, you can't do that. You know, and, hey, he wasn't saying, I won't let you. He was saying, dudes, you don't know. I mean, these are young kids that are just hitting it big. It's their first record. He says, you guys don't know. You have to put out a dance song first. It has to be first. And they were saying, no, no, we want this song. And he says, no, that you don't do it that way. And they said, well, we want to. And he said, let me show you. And he showed like 20 or 30 albums that they knew. And the first song that had been put out on all these albums was a dance song or an upbeat song, an up-tempo song. And they were like, oh, we didn't know that. And he suddenly realized, why would they? They were 22. This guy was 35 and had a lot of experience. He knew that one of the rules was you put out this song first. Now, I didn't know it when I read it, but that's the kind of stuff, if you're a manager, and folks, please, if you're a music person, please don't write me and tell me that I think the AR person was the manager of the band. I get that. That's not the case I'm making. I'm talking about wisdom and experience and having insights that perhaps people with less experience don't have. And so those kinds of things affect your ability to understand the experience your directs are having with your implementation, your behaviors, your guidance, your leadership, your management, whatever. And your role power distorts your relationship with your directs in the same way that you're never quite sure what your boss is working on. Your directs don't understand your role as well as you might imagine. In the same way that it's hard for you to get a solid block of time with your boss to go over a bunch of stuff, your directs struggle with your calendar. And another thing, guys, your directs do not see you as a nice person.
You're not saying they're not nice, right?
No, of course not. If you listen to the show, you're a fine individual indeed.
An outstanding individual.
Yeah. No, look, you look in the mirror in the morning and you see a good person. That's the way you were made. You're supposed to do that, right? But it's not about who you are. It's about how your directs see you. They see you as their boss. In the same way that you see your boss as your boss, and that's the first thing you see about him or her, and then you say, and he or she's a nice person. So your directs don't see you as a nice person. They see you as their boss. That's the primary filter that all communications come to them from you.
That's right. And then when you roll out something new, they don't see you as a nice person. They see you as the boss, and they don't see your intent. And so they make all sorts of things about your intent, unless you brief them and tell them, right?
Yeah. I mean, your intent's obvious to you, but it isn't to them. If you change what you're doing, it's almost natural for your direct self-preservation mechanisms, because of your role power over them, to cause them to see first all the possible negative rationales for your activity. More meetings? He doesn't trust me. More reports? He thinks I'm behind, and maybe he thinks I'm hiding how far behind I am. Regular mini performance reviews? He wants to have lots of ammunition for the end of the year. Now, you say to yourself, holy Toledo, I've earned the right to tell my team. You can't be thinking that about me. Folks, we don't care. If you've been with the same team for 5 years and have busted your tail on relationships, and as we've said before, can tell us the first names of all the kids if everybody reports to you, and you meet with them every week, and you don't raise your voice, and you're clear, and you give feedback, and so on. Okay, then maybe you have a case to be made that your directs are not going to assume worst case or potential negative intent, or sounds horrible to say it this way, but nefarious intent for your new managerial change. But for 90% of the managers in the world, they do. Now, they think that initially, and then maybe they get over it, but it still happens. And there's more. Whether we like to admit it or not, there are factions, groups among your directs, even if you only have 5 or 6. If you remember our guidance from several years ago about the ore cart, where you're trying to pull an ore cart and there are 3 groups or factions among your team, one group is helping, one group is neutral, they're in the cart, one group is helping pull the cart with you, and one group is frankly working against you in some way, maybe just withholding productivity because they're in the wrong job or whatever, but they're not actively helping. In fact, they're pulling against you. Lacking a positive reason for any change, which if you don't brief them on it, they won't naturally assume it, the detractors in your group will make up harmful intent for your new behaviors and then share those with others because that's what they do. The neutral people, the people in the ore cart riding along, are going to listen, and your supporters will probably remain quiet because they know they'll never win over the detractors.
Yeah, the odds are stacked 2-1 against you.
2-1 against, yeah. Now, if you do brief your directs, the supportive group will have talking points when the discussion among your team members turns to, what do you think about this stuff the boss is doing? They'll have specific points to say, most likely about why you're doing it, to refute the naysayers, say, oh, he's just doing this for this reason or that reason. I got to tell you something. If I'm in the middle, if I'm in the ore cart, and I'm observing a conversation between a naysayer and a supporter, and the naysayer says, well, you know, he's just doing this to check in with us. He just wants to be able to see when we're making mistakes. If that happens, and then the supporter immediately is able to say, because he or she was briefed, hey, he just told us specifically he was doing it to build better relationships because he knows he wants a better relationship with his boss, and so he's willing to give us time to talk about things that are important to us. He literally just said he wasn't doing it for that reason. Are you calling the boss a liar? Now, if you're the guy in the middle, you're going, okay, I can see why I can support the boss on this one. And it also makes the naysayer look small and petty and negative, which over time will work against them.
Yeah, I think this point you're making is huge. And when I was reading the show notes, it really stuck out for me. And kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, that you're not a whole lot different than your boss, and what your directs need from you is the things that you want from your boss. And earlier I said, I think one of the reasons why managers push back at briefing this stuff is they don't feel like they're in a good position to make a defense of the changes they're asking for. And you want to give ammunition to your folks to defend you, right? So when the uncomfortable moment comes up and there's, the people in the ore cart and there's people that are working against you and they're making an argument for why this is a bad thing, you want to give your directs information talking points such that they can defend you. So they feel strongly, they feel comfortable in voicing why this thing is a good thing. And if they don't feel that way, they don't feel like they have the arguments to make, they're just going to shut up because they know they're going to lose the battle. There's a really good book I read. I've read it several times. And it said something along the lines of always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you.
Oh, that's good. And always be prepared
to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you.
Yeah.
And I've taken that to heart in many ways. And now we don't get into politics here, but it's safe to say I'm a capitalist, right? And so I do a lot of reading on economics and why things work the way they work. So when I have that conversation with a person who is not a capitalist and wonders and is more of a socialist, I'm not a socialist, probably pretty clear, that I have a defense, that I have an argument I can make as to why capitalism is a good thing and why the world is much, much better today than it was hundreds of years ago, largely a result of capitalism. And so if you believe in something, you have to have a defense. Give your folks a defense, right?
Yeah. And I would argue that there are people who say, yeah, no, I want to hold back on belief. There's risk with belief. There's risk that I'll be wrong. It's a belief. You can't prove it to me. We see a lot of this in technology firms. Well, you can't prove that to me. I'm always amazed by people who say, you need to show me your data for your managerial style because without data, I can't actually do anything. And then I say to them, well, how are you managing now? Where were you able to build this database? I know you never came across it. You didn't study management and PhD level research. You didn't look at our data. How did you come up with your managerial style? And they say, well, you know, I just kind of put some stuff together. I'm like, oh, okay. So you're comfortable doing that if it's easy. But if it's hard, you need data. I got to tell you, folks, if you want your company to get better, you have to be willing to change. And there's an old joke. It's a cynical, horrible joke about CEOs, which goes like this. Change is hard. You go first. Well, of course, what we all want in a leader is for the leader to go first, right? In fact, I'm working on guidance right now called Model and Measure. If you're a manager and you expect your people to engage in certain behaviors that are similar to yours, maybe different because of the level, but fundamentally in the same way, there are two things you've got to do once you introduce and train it. You've got to model it. In other words, you have to do what you expect them to do. The leader sets the example, and you've got to measure it. Modeling is what leaders do. Measuring is what managers do. Okay, enough. We could talk about this for hours, right? I do want to say one final why concept for the important how of briefing. Guys, don't you just love it when your company changes systems or processes and assumes everybody understands everything about how it affects them and doesn't brief you on the changes and then gets angry when you ask questions? Come on. Do the right thing by your directs, even if it's only the opposite of the things you hate being done to you. So what that means is, as we've said several times, brief your directs when you change something. If you're rolling out the Trinity, let's give a specific example. We recommend you introduce each stage individually with its own briefing. If you're introducing something new, and the Trinity would end up, you know, one-on-ones feedback coaching delegation, would take a year, too many topics, and a year's worth of change is a lot of topics, especially topics that won't happen right away, clouds the learning process. So generally, one idea at a time. So in the case of the Trinity, you introduce one-on-ones first by themselves. If you're a licensee, you can use the slides that we've created to help you build a presentation that explains the what and the why and the how and the when and so on. You don't need to create new slides from scratch. Folks, don't confuse slide creation with presentation preparation. They're two different things. The general rule I see in terms of presentations that people create, Mike, is the old 90-10 rule, 90% on slides and 10% on rehearsal, when in fact it should be 10% and 90%.
Other way around, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Then, after you've briefed on one-on-ones, 12 weeks later, at the earliest, brief on your plan for starting to communicate about performance using the feedback model. 16 weeks after that, brief on the coaching model. Use our slides again to save yourself each time. Now, look, you can modify them if you're burning to do so, but don't create them from scratch. Maybe you already started doing one-on-ones or feedback or any of the Trinity, but you didn't start with a briefing. That's fine. Take time now to go back over the basics and use a short briefing to fine-tune what you've been doing. In other words, to say, hey, I did this and I realize now I got a little bit off track. I want to get back on track. Think about all the systems and processes in your company that are constantly being adjusted, because as time changes, systems change and processes change, or the output that you want or the inputs that you get associated with that system or process change. And if the system or process doesn't change, pretty soon it breaks and people don't use it anymore. And then it's wasteful, especially if you're maintaining it and it's wasteful.
And don't assume that if you've been, you introduced a change some time back and you didn't brief it, that everybody, all your directs have figured out your intent. I mean, they figured it out already, right? It's generally not true. What they may not be talking about as much, but they've made some conclusion about why you're doing it, and it's been locked into their brain.
Yeah.
They're just not talking about it. So go back.
And don't be afraid to say, I probably should have done this before. I probably should have taken 15 minutes and walked you through what I was doing and why I was doing it. And I regret it, and I'll try to do it better in the future. And, you know, it's funny, managers say, well, I don't know that I'd want to do that in front of my people.
Oh, you get so much cred.
Okay, fine. Why? Well, it shows that I did something wrong.
I made a mistake. As if they don't know that.
Yeah. So now what you're saying is you're not willing to model the behavior that when you make a mistake, you're going to be open about it, that you expect from your directs as a given. If your directs make a mistake, you expect them to be open about it. Hey, it's okay. You made a mistake. It's okay. Just let me know. And if you need my help fixing it, we'll fix it. Let's not focus on the mistake. You know, the old saying in Washington, the cover-up is always worse than the crime. And so you're literally saying, I don't like it when my directs don't tell me when they made a mistake, while you're modeling the very behavior they've learned from you. The apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. So if you've done it, one of the tendencies we notice is that managers who don't brief, you're going to get a lot more pushback. You're going to get a lot more questions that you have to answer individually if you didn't do the briefing. It ultimately takes more time without a briefing, particularly when you get a bunch of the same questions from each of the people on your team because they don't know it. And now you have to answer that question 4 or 5 times, as opposed to in a briefing, you only have to answer it once and everybody gets the exact same answer. And everybody knows that everybody else got the exact same answer. And so then they can repeat that answer to everybody else in the days and weeks that follow. I mean, for instance, suppose you've only been doing one-on-ones when you're not traveling. Maybe 1 week a month as a manager, you have to go to another office. Do a briefing. Say, I've been doing one-on-ones for a while. I'm going to reinvigorate them. Use your briefing to say, hey, they're working. I like them. And yet, you find yourself too far behind when you come back into the office from a road trip because you don't do one-on-ones that week because of time zone changes. And so now you're going to start doing them even when you're on the road telephonically. That's a change you're introducing to how you do one-on-ones. It doesn't really matter that according to the right way to do one-on-ones, you were doing them wrong. You've just discovered there's a way to do them better. We're not going to beat ourselves up for the effort we made in doing one-on-ones for weeks and weeks and weeks. We're going to say, hey, listen, I learned a better way, and I'm going to incorporate that. Wouldn't you want your directs, if they're doing something a certain way and they realize they didn't understand something or there was a weakness or they found out something that will make it better, wouldn't you want them to implement it and let you know about it? Of course you would. And if you're the boss, what you would do is brief them before you start changing because of your role power, because of the defensiveness of directs when they don't know why their boss is doing something. So you brief on the entirety of one-on-ones. And then, of course, in order to only make the one change of I'm going to do them while I'm on the road and here are some specifics about how to do telephonic one-on-ones that you may not know because we've never done them before. But then your directs get the benefit of hearing the why and the how. And understanding a lot of the underpinnings before. And maybe you'll share with them why you decided to start doing it. And hopefully it's good reasons. Maybe you've been doing feedback, but you've just not been doing it enough. You did it a few times and you fell off. Then you were reminded of it. You had some time and so you did it some more. And you never briefed on feedback, which I suspect if you don't brief on feedback and suddenly you go up to your directs and say, hey, can I get some feedback? You'll literally have their head explode.
Yeah, not a good idea.
But regardless, use a briefing on feedback, on the basics, to help them understand the why so that they will be better with the how. Overall, guys, I think we've beat this dead horse about 7 different ways. If you're going to change something about how you manage or lead, it's better to brief your team before you do it. They'll be less defensive. They'll know why you're doing it. And someone who has a why can bear almost any how, but without a why, all the how in the world won't quiet the questions.
Awesome, dude. About time we did this one.
Yeah, 11 years late.
All right, my friend.
Thanks, partner.
We'll see you. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.